Hey there, this is Seth Juarez coming to you live from ChefConf, where it's a really interesting technology, really interesting community, and we're here to learn all about it. I'm a dev, and so I'm excited to learn about all the cool things that devs can do with Chef, not only with Chef, but also with the community.
Sure.
And also with the tooling, because there were some cool things that you announced that I looked at and I wrote some stuff down. We have here a special guest. Tell us who you are and what you do, my friend.
Yeah, hi, Seth. My name's Nathan Harvey. I'm the VP of Community Development here at Chef. I'm also sort of the chief hug officer
of course.
ChefConf.
Yes, and we are going to get a really good hug in at the end where people are going to want to, you might want to hide the children. No, I don't want to get you too excited about it. So tell us about Chef in general. What is it that Chef's aims to do? I saw there was three components, and then today you announced some things that sort of orchestrate and automate those three things together.
Yeah, absolutely. So first let's talk about what Chef is. Okay. Chef is a bunch of things. The first thing Chef is, honestly, is a community. It's a community of professionals that really care about the work that IT does and how IT can fundamentally change the way businesses work. Mm-hmm. So that's the first component of Chef. The second component of Chef itself is a framework. It's a software framework that allows you to automate your infrastructure, automate your applications. And of course, Chef is also a company. It's the name of the company that I work for. But if we go back to those three things that you mentioned, the three open source projects that we have, the first one is Chef. Chef itself is all about infrastructure automation. So when we say infrastructure, think about the servers or the cloud instances or the containers on which your applications run. This infrastructure is hugely important. And many times over the past years, right, you have sysadmins that are, or IT pros that are building these machines by hand. They build them with love. They painstakingly go through this.
Right.
They start hugging their servers.
And then we screw it up, devs, and we just
hose
everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you have to make a change, and it's that one sysadmin that knows how that server is configured. And unfortunately, that person is likely to tell you no.
Yeah, right.
Every time. So Chef can automate all of those tasks of setting up that infrastructure, making sure that all of the components in your infrastructure are talking together, network together properly, that they have all the correct installations, all the correct configuration, and so forth.
So let's dig into that one first.
Yeah.
And by the way, we're taking questions live. If you go hashtag ChefConf live and tweet your questions, I am monitoring them right here so we can get them all in. So let's start with that, infrastructure. So as a developer, I usually write the thing on my machine, and then it works there, and things are great, and then some magical stuff happens.
Yeah.
So what responsibility do I have as a dev when it comes to sort of describing the type of infrastructure that I want? How does Chef help with that?
Yeah, sure. So there's a couple of ways that it helps with that. And the way that you should go about describing your infrastructure first, it's weird, it's talking to someone else. Like with your mouth.
No.
Yeah.
Stop.
Talk to another human.
Nice.
It's crazy, right? Like I said, Chef starts at the community, and really Chef is sort of founded and born within the DevOps community. And in DevOps, we really talk about how do we bring those various sides together? How do we bring dev and IT pros or dev and sysadmins together to actually take what you've built and run it in the real world? And so you need to sit down and first have a conversation. And then together, we can do a couple of things. One thing that we can discover is how do you build better applications or that are operable? And by operable, I mean they have to run in the target deployment infrastructure that we're talking about. Are we talking about running in Azure, or are we talking about running in a data center? There are very different concerns that you have with how you build that application. But then we also have to talk about what sort of telemetry is your application going to give me when I want to start monitoring your application? How do I know if it's up, if I'm responsible for managing that? So we need to have that conversation and talk through those things, come up with some design goals. But then the way that we'll really start collaborating is through code. We can sit down together and start writing what we call in Chef, we'll start writing recipes that describe exactly what that infrastructure is.
What does that look like? I mean, is it just a text file that says I need these sets of machines with these sets of features on them?
Right, so it's actually code, so it is a Ruby file. So we sit down and when we write a recipe, what we're doing with a recipe typically is we're thinking about a single server or a single class of server, if you will, within that infrastructure. So if you think about running, say, a web application, you might have a load balancer at the front, sort of your web application tier, and then a database at the back end. Well, when you describe that web application tier, you may have one, you may have 10,000, but each one of those are gonna be the same, right? So we're gonna sit down and write down what needs to be installed and configured here. how does this server need to know, like, here's the database, or how does the load balancer know which ones it can send information to? We'll capture all of that in the code within Chef.
I see. And so it's a Ruby file. It's actual code yep. that describes what your environment may or may not look like.
Yes.
But it feels like, I don't know, as a dev, it feels like if I'm writing a standard scalable web application,
right.
there's got to be a pattern for that already.
Yeah.
So how does Chef help with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we write those recipes, we do this really fun thing with them. We package them up into cookbooks.
I see.
And so a cookbook will have maybe multiple different recipes. But the cool thing about a cookbook is it's sort of your distributable artifact. So I can take that cookbook and I can share it with the community.
Right.
So if you've written a cookbook that describes your application or the desired state for your application, we have a place called the supermarket where you can actually publish your cookbook. I can come and find your cookbook. I can download it. I can make modifications to it myself if I need to. But perhaps your cookbook does exactly what I need, and I can start running that in my own environment.
Love the analogy because I'm all about food. So you have
yeah.
recipes, cookbooks, supermarkets.
Absolutely.
So who can upload sort of cookbooks to the supermarket? Are these things you make?
Yeah.
Is it stuff that developers make?
It's a great question. So anyone who has a supermarket account can upload cookbooks to the supermarket.
I see.
And so the way you get a supermarket account, you go and you sign up for one. It's quite easy. And so typically what we find are sometimes you'll have what you might consider developers. Sometimes you'll have what you might consider sysadmins. But they're just describing different components in their infrastructure.
Right.
And because we are a community, we're into sharing. We want to share that with others so that we can bring the whole community up.
I see. So when you're saying that Chef is not only sort of this tooling, when you say there's this huge aspect called the community, it's not just like a nice markety thing. It's effectively a lot of the cookbooks and recipes are coming from the community.
Absolutely. In fact, Chef itself is open source, right? So the three projects that we mentioned, we haven't talked about all three.
Right, we'll get to those.
Right.
We'll totally get to them.
But Chef itself is open source. So not only do you have the community that's writing this code and sharing it with one another, but that community is also making Chef itself better by improving the tooling that's there, by giving us feedback. And part of the reason that we make it open source, I'll tell you what, Seth, I don't know anything about your applications. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about the infrastructure requirements that you have, but I do know that Chef provides a framework that's flexible enough that you can describe that.
Even if
you don't know Chef, we can sit down, I'll teach you the Chef.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Definitely.
So Chef, what it does is it allows you to sort of describe your infrastructure and code.
Yes.
The cool thing that I like about it as a dev is I can check that in somewhere and I can see diffs if I'm using Git or any
Absolutely.
Source control. And so I'm able to migrate, and if there's a change, you can see that in the code.
Yes. And it's not just about checking it into source control. Although you must use version control,
yeah.
please.
Yes.
Everyone out there, you have to use proper version control
yeah.
systems. So, but by treating it as code, we get a lot of other benefits. Sure, we can check in at version control, we can see the changes over time, but we also have the ability to write automated tests.
Oh.
Right? Think about the unit tests that you write today for your own application.
So how do you unit test that? Is it literally going to spin up the environment and check it?
Ah.
Or is it going to do some kind of dependency injection?
Yes.
What is it going to do?
So there are a number of different ways that you can test, and we could have a whole hour on testing,
we
right?
We should.
So we can do unit testing where we're just going to look at the recipes themselves, make sure that the resources that you need are actually there and behaving the way that you want.
Right.
But we may have some more functional or integration testing where we will, in fact, spin up an environment, take that code, put it onto that environment, and then execute it, and then run follow-up tests after it's been converged.
So not only are you, because as a dev, when I check stuff in, I'm usually thinking about, okay, good, I have version control, I could see the change over time, but also I want my code to be testable, and you're saying
Absolutely.
You can have infrastructure tests that help with sort of that integration.
Look, Seth, here's the key. Infrastructure as code. It's code. Applications are code. Now your infrastructure is code. We bring the same software development practices that the application developers have had for years. We bring that to our infrastructure. We follow those same practices. We do things like code reviews. We do unit testing. We do continuous delivery, continuous integration. We do all of these things with our infrastructure code.
That's really cool. So Chef is a tool that allows you to describe your infrastructure as code.
Yes.
Open source.
Yes.
It comes with a bolted-on community that allows you to sort of describe
yes.
what you may already be doing.
Exactly.
And you're able to download those cookbooks and recipes and sort of deploy in your own environment.
That's exactly right.
So second phase that we're that you do with Chef?
Yeah. So then the next open source project that we talk about is this new project. We announced it maybe a month ago. It's called Habitat.
Okay.
Now, Habitat is all about application automation. You know what application automation
is, tell
right?
me, fill me
no,
in.
No, you don't know what application automation is. Okay, so application automation and Habitat specifically, Habitat is there to help you build, manage, and deploy your applications. So let's walk through those three things.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about building your application. I don't know if this has ever happened to you, Seth, because you look like you're pretty smart.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I look that way.
But for me, sometimes when I build an application or when a developer gives me an application, I go to run it on infrastructure and I find out there's a missing dependency.
That has happened to me.
Maybe only once.
No, I mean a couple of every time.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, exactly. a couple of every single time. Yeah. You lose that, right? So with Habitat, we start in the build process. And the way that we build your applications is we actually give you a way to describe everything that is required from your application, on your application. So you start and you actually build the application itself in what we call a clean room environment. It's basically a very minimal OS and there's nothing there. So there's no chance that you will forget about a dependency that just happened to
but
be there.
How will I ever, as a dev, say it works on my machine after that? It feels like I need to have an excuse,
well,
right?
So here's the other thing, like the next great thing about Habitat, after building it, you can also, well, we're gonna skip ahead to the deploy part, right? When you've built this package, you can now run this package anywhere you want. So you can run it on your machine and you can say, hey, it works on my machine. Right? And
yeah.
But then the cool thing is I can take that same package and because all of those dependencies have been built into the package itself,
right.
I can run it on our production infrastructure.
Right, because it's been described fully.
Exactly, it's been fully described.
Two questions about that. The first one is going to be sort of a broader question, the other one more specific.
Sure.
So how can you, about the myriad of the types of applications, like say you're building Ruby on Rails, or you're doing something with some other programming in Java,
sure.
or let's just say you're using Scala, which is part
Great.
Of Java.
Yeah.
How do you describe such a diverse set of applications in a systematic way? How do you do that?
Right. I'll tell you what, it starts with a plan.
Right.
Okay? So in Habitat land, what we do when we describe these applications, we actually write down what we call a plan. So it's a Habitat plan, and that describes all of those packages that are required. And not only that are required, but how do I create those packages? So let's say, for example, that you are running a Ruby on Rails application.
Okay.
What's the first thing you need? You need some Ruby,
right?
So where are you going to get Ruby from? Well, you're going to get it from Habitat itself. So if there's, and just like in the supermarket, we have a Habitat Depot where you can go and share Habitat plans and Habitat packages with the rest of the community. So you can go to the Habitat site and you can grab a Ruby package, a Ruby Habitat, and you can start and then start building your application around that.
So you might also have some gems, for example. Is that in the part of the plan?
The gems would be packaged into that Habitat because what you don't want, this is another thing that happens. You installed all the gems, you got the app running, you give it to me. It's been 6 weeks since you installed those gems. I do a gem install.
Oh, it'll hose everything.
It's done. Yeah. Like everything is busted, right? Mm-hmm. So we put those in at build time and they're actually part of the package.
I see. So you're actually downloading those binaries and you're storing them in Habitat so that every time the application is going to be built or deployed or whatever, it has the stuff you know works.
Exactly, it's all there. Not only is it all there, let's talk about that manage phase, right? We talked about build, we talked about deploy it anywhere. Let's talk about that manage phase. So not only are all of those packages there, but think about this scenario. You've deployed your application and all of a sudden you woke up this morning to find out that there's an open SSL vulnerability.
Oh, that's happened.
Yeah, once or twice, right? So think about that. How do you ensure that you've patched that OpenSSL vulnerability across all of your applications? Well, first you might just install that open, like in today's world, you'd install the OpenSSL package. Now we're updated, right?
Well, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, we don't know.
It has the app. Does the application need to reload to pick up those new libraries, or is it still running the old version of that library? With Habitat, because we're going to package OpenSSL right into that application, we can also go and query Habitat, ask it in these application servers which version of OpenSSL is running. So you get all of this insight into your running applications.
I
see.
You see it. So not only, and that's cool because sometimes you just don't know. You might have a server farm of 100 web servers,
right.
And someone made this one be this way and that one be that way, but it still works?
Yes.
And if there's a problem with a particular package, you're saying Habitat allows you to sort of query what is on everything.
Yes, I can find out down to the build. which version of each package, which build, and not only that, but where did it come from? What's the source of this package? And that package source can be verified because they're all signed packages. So I know, like, I wrote the Ruby package, you wrote a Ruby package, maybe someone on our team accidentally installed the Seth Ruby package on one of those servers. We want to find that and get that Seth Ruby package out of there.
And that would be because the way you've deployed it is you use Habitat to deploy it, and so it knows what it has.
Exactly.
Okay, exactly right. So we've talked about sort of Chef and managing infrastructure.
Yep.
We talked about Habitat and managing sort of the code infrastructure,
yeah,
so
the,
to speak.
The
What's the third part?
Okay, so I'll give you another scenario. This happens from time to time. You hear from your boss that it's the end of the quarter, and you know what that means? The auditor is coming.
Oh,
tell me, how do you feel?
Yeah, it's like, oh man, did I? And with security audits, for example, you have to be fairly retentive about specific things. And when you're slinging code, you're not thinking about that stuff.
Right, right. I'll tell you how I feel when I hear of that. I feel, okay, this half of the building, the auditor is allowed in. This half of the building, not.
Right.
And my one goal the week the auditor is on site, get the auditor off site as fast as possible. Right? Like, let's get them out of there. And but so, like, that's terrible. We shouldn't hate our auditors like that.
No, they're there to help
us.
They
are. They're there to help us. But what do they do when they come in to help us? One of the things that they'll do is they'll come in and they'll scan our systems. Think about it. They're scanning your running production system. It's kind of like the oil light on your dashboard coming
right.
on. When it comes on, it's too late. Like, you already have that problem. So that's one problem. The second thing that they come in with, in addition to their scanners, is usually a notebook. A notebook that is, here are the compliance controls that you have to follow. And so have you ever taken a notebook, like a physical notebook, and put it on a server and say, follow those rules? And,
yeah.
and if you have, does it work?
No,
no,
I mean,
not at all.
It literally just gets hot.
Right,
that's
it just
it
gets
does.
Hot, yeah. right? So what if we could take those compliance controls and actually capture those in code and describe those compliance controls in code? And that's what we have, this new open source framework called InSpec. And so InSpec allows us to, in a very descriptive fashion, describe those controls. It's so good that we could sit down with an auditor and say, look, here are the controls that I've written. I've built these into my development process. So as you're writing an application change, as part of your testing process, you can apply all of those compliance controls and make sure that your applications and your infrastructure are staying compliant. Not only that, but you can continuously run those controls in your production environment. So you're auditing every 30 minutes.
That's amazing. So I'm trying to understand, like, what do these tests look like? I mean, how do you, because when they come in, they're like, hey, are you blah, blah, blah. What is the blah, blah, blah that we're testing?
Right, sure. So it could be anything. I'll give you a pretty simple example. So maybe you connect to your servers via SSH. Well, to be secure, you have to use certain protocols of SSH, right?
Sure.
You can't use SSH version 1. We all know that that's a no longer secure protocol, right? So how do you test that? Well, you might want to just write an InSpec control, and if I had a keyboard or something, I could draw out the code, but I'll just say it with my mouth.
And I will parse it.
Yeah, very good.
Okay.
Okay, so the test is gonna look like this. Describe SSHD config protocol should equal to.
That's it. But
how does it
go about and know that that's that?
Yeah, so InSpec is this language that is going to execute on that machine, and it will read that test, that code, it will execute that code, and then it will give you back the result. It will say, yep, it's version 2, or no, it's version 1, and you have a problem.
And so, what kind of level of testing can you do with compliance? If that feels like you've written a really good framework for inspecting sort of what's available on the machine, but what other kind of compliance tests can you do other than that?
Yeah, sure, so InSpec can certainly look at what's on your machine, but again, InSpec is open source. And so the beauty of open source is when we write the language, we have some ideas of the use cases, but we don't know all of the use cases. And we can get community contributions and collaboration to expand that.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that we've made InSpec do, as an example, there's this framework called OpenSCAP, or the SCAP framework, and it describes a bunch of compliance controls. We can those compliance controls are actually described in XML.
Okay.
And so for one control, you may actually have to look into 4 different XML files. And if you're a Java developer, that feels so good.
Yeah,
right.
There's some happiness, right?
It is,
right?
It's really, really happy. But what if we could make that simpler? So with InSpec, we can actually point at some OpenSCAP or SCAP compliance, we can import those as InSpec controls right out of the box. And now you have Ruby It's much more descriptive.
Sure.
It's a language that you're used to, and it's the same language that you're using to describe your infrastructure.
I see.
So now we're bringing all of those things together, and by capturing that compliance as code, it now also becomes feasible for you to actually run some of those compliance tests during your development environment. The thing I've always hated is, as a developer, I'm building something, and then 6 months later, the auditor comes in and starts smacking me down, right? And I say, well, give me access to your tools. No, they're too expensive. You can't run these tools. You're not in the security department. How do we help
How do we even
know? How do we fix that?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So we talked about sort of Chef.
Yeah.
We talked about Habitat.
Yeah.
And then we talked about Inspect.
Yeah.
It feels like we have three sort of things that are living independently. How do I monitor them all at the same time?
Yeah.
And I think that gets to the announcements
it
that you made today.
That gets to the announcement today. So the thing that we announced today is this framework that we call Chef Automate. So Chef Automate is the framework that will tie together Chef, Habitat, and Inspect. And what Chef Automate will do is give you the workflow, the visibility, and the compliance that you need to run all of your applications. So when I say workflow, what I'm really talking about there is how do changes move from your laptop into the production environment?
Got it.
And guess what? You're not the only one in that chain.
No, clearly.
Right? You're working with a team of people. We had on stage today, we had GE on stage. They have 30,000 software developers, right? So they need some workflow that will allow them to move code, move change from a laptop into their production environment. So Chef Workflow is what provides that. Now, we then have Chef Visibility. Chef Visibility is what's gonna give you that insight across all of the moving parts in your infrastructure. So who wrote a new cookbook and uploaded it to our infrastructure? What is the current status of our nodes? Are they in the desired state that they should be, or are they out of policy? And then on top of that, we then have compliance. And compliance will act as a scanner to execute those tests that you've written. It will generate reports for you that you can hand over to your auditor. It gives you that full Chef Automate, gives you full control of both your infrastructure, your applications, and then of course, you're gonna be compliant as you do that.
So automated visibility sort of ties in sort of Chef, the Chef Habitat, and the Chef Inspect together so that you can see sort of in one place.
Yes.
Where everything is.
And it's a unified, as a user, it's a unified experience. So if I'm looking at my workflow of how do I push change through the system, I go to one place. If I'm looking at what's the current state of my infrastructure, I go to that same place. It's all right there in that same user interface.
So let's get to that. I'm a dev, right? And the first thing I'm gonna ask is, okay, open source is great. I love open source.
Yeah.
I wanna be able to use your stuff.
Yeah.
How do you make money?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I need to give you dollars somehow so that you can continue doing great
stuff.
That's
awesome.
Yes.
Because I love open source and I love the community. I also like to pay my mortgage on time.
Sure,
right?
Me too.
So how do we make money? It's a great question. So when we talk about Chef, Habitat, Inspect, each of those three frameworks completely open source. Chef Automate, that gives you the workflow, the visibility, and the compliance on top of that, that is a for sale product. So that's a commercial
offering.
So you
host it and you manage it.
So we can host some of those components for you, or you can install it and manage it yourself.
Awesome. So that way, if you want to have it on your own premises or...
Of course.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. So let's talk, we have about 5 minutes
left.
Okay,
great.
Let's talk about sort of the value of community when it comes to Chef in all of these phases of your development. Tell
absolutely, absolutely. So the value of community, first, like I said, we do open source because we know that although we employ very smart engineers, we cannot solve all of the world's problems. We have to have very tight collaboration, very tight feedback with both our customers and everyone that's using our software. The way that it becomes more successful is that more people know how to use it and more people are using it to do more and more difficult and complex things. Mm-hmm. And so the only way to get there is through a community of professionals that is diverse, that has a diverse set of problems, a diverse set of background, a diverse set of challenges that we want to go and solve.
So there was a cool sort of montage at the beginning where you come in and you did this thing called Hug Ops. What's that all about?
Okay, so I want you to just like think about the worst experience, the worst sort of stereotypical IT sysadmin developer, right? What do? They sit in the basement, in a cubicle, or in a tall, tiny office. There's no windows. No one loves them. But these people like, we're running the internet.
Yeah.
We are making companies successful by helping them become software-driven organizations, right? And when you do that, that is a very special thing.
Right.
The businesses are starting to understand that better. And so, yes, developers are being elevated. The developers are eating the world, right?
Yeah.
We've all heard that before, right? Well, the same is true with the infrastructure folks, the sysadmins, the IT pros that are making that possible. And so the real thing behind that HugOps is, look, things break a lot also.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes you're feeling down. Sometimes your code is failing tests. Sometimes you had a production outage. It's cool. We're here to help and support you. Here's a hug for you. Or maybe you wrote an amazing application. You deserve a hug for that.
Absolutely. We're going to get an awkward hug at the end, but to finish up, because we have about 3 minutes,
yeah.
How does someone sort of get involved with Chef, the software, and
Certainly.
Chef, the community?
Yeah, so the best way to get involved first is to go to Learn Chef.
Okay.
That will allow you to put your hands on tutorials. Of course, they're all free. We want to get you started playing with the software. Mm-hmm. The next thing that I would highly recommend you do, find a meetup in your area. Whether it's a DevOps meetup, a Chef meetup, something, go find other people that care about the same things that you do that are maybe outside of your workplace.
Right.
And if that sounds like a step too far, start talking to the people that you work with.
Right.
Talk to other organizations. Start building that own community yourself. Of course, there are other things like Channel 9, like podcasts, books that you can read. There are plenty of resources online.
And then the last question I asked is, because I work for Microsoft, is Chef, because you talked about it being described in Ruby, is Chef something that works with sort of the Microsoft stack as well?
Oh, absolutely. So when we talk about managing your infrastructure as code, that infrastructure might be Linux, that infrastructure might be Windows. We're very comfortable there.
And we don't care at Microsoft. If it has a clock cycle, we want to host it on our cloud.
Absolutely, and speaking of clouds, you can go right into the Azure Marketplace and actually install a Chef server from within the Azure Marketplace right in your own Azure account.
That is amazing. Well, for you, I have something. Because Chef feels like a pocket knife for developers and IT folks, I have this special gift from you. It's been a pleasure talking to you again. Learn Chef, is that the website? What's the website?
Learn Chef is where you can go for the tutorials. Chef.io is where you'll go to find out everything else.
Fantastic. Well, we are again here at ChefConf Live, and we have some tons of good content coming up next. We have a very talented person that's going to talk a lot about DevOps and how important it is and how you can do it too. Let's get our weird hug in here,
buddy.
All right,
Seth, let's do it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's the stuff.
Get some leg in there. Thanks so much, Nathan.
All
we'll
right,
see you
Seth,
next time.
Thanks very much.
And we'll see you in a little bit.
All right.